How you doing? You sound great.
I mean, personally, like I sound great, or like my audio quality sounds great? Because I would disagree with the second of those two things.
I mean, I can hear you.
Okay, that's one aspect of it. We're back to Skype again, and it, you know, it sounds like trash. I'm just going to say.
I think that Discord sounds fine. It does sound clearer, but I don't know. I don't know if it's maybe just your mic setup, but the gating is so abrupt on yours. And I feel that Discord is very, it's very sensitive to my internet connection. It doesn't seem to pull as much bandwidth for itself as some other applications do. So if anything goes on my network, I'm basically screwed. Last episode, towards like the last half hour of that, I maybe heard a half of what you said.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was kind of rough.
Cut out that much?
Yeah,
and
well,
Skype is that much better? I guess because it sounds like the bandwidth is a little bit easier.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the technology is behind it. I think partially the problem last time was that my sister was streaming Harry Potter from my computer, and May was streaming The Simpsons downstairs. So I think that had something to do with it. And then, I'm very careful about this stuff generally. I'll turn off Plex and stuff if I feel that I need to. If it's something that we're streaming locally, it's usually not such a big deal. So if May wants to watch The Simpsons, I'll leave it on. Usually my sister isn't streaming stuff from my computer. She'll just download it to her phone and then she'll watch it from there. So I don't know what's going on with that. But then also, I take my Backblaze and I put it on, I put it on that setting where it's like only if I say so. Otherwise, it would do it automatically or on a schedule. And last week, while two different transcoding streams were being issued from my computer, Backblaze just started backing up, and I couldn't stop it. I kept hitting pause, and nothing was happening. It was very frustrating.
Well, what operating system are you on?
I am on whatever isn't Mojave.
You're on Mojave or you're not Mojave?
I am on macOS High Sierra.
Yeah, same. Okay.
Yeah.
Backblaze sent out a big thing to all their customers. I'm a Backblaze customer as well. And they sent out something for compatibility with Mojave, but I haven't updated yet, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, me neither. I usually wait until you say that it's okay. And
it's not okay.
Well, you know what? I had to stop waiting for you to update to High Sierra. There were like a couple of features that I really wanted with High Sierra, and now that I have it, I can't even recall what they were. But I waited for a really long time, and you never told me that it was okay. And you know, I said, you know what? It's been a year. They've announced the new one. I'm just gonna do it, and it's been okay.
High Sierra was fine eventually. I feel like if I was a Pro Tools user, I'd probably feel a lot different. Pro Tools like hasn't had a stable, like up to date Mac release in a long time. I feel like that's why I thank
why is that?
God every day. I don't know. I think Avid just doesn't have any interest in, you know, keeping stuff up to date. You know, or they're just playing hard to get or something like that. They're pushing more customers away. That's how I feel. I mean, there are people that are still on macOS 10.10,
right?
Because they want to be able to use their old ass version of Pro Tools. And,
yeah,
and that is fine. Like, I understand, Avid not wanting to keep like a version of Pro Tools from 5 years ago up to date. That happens with all software. But like, I feel like Pro Tools, one of the Pro Tools versions, was only compatible with macOS 10.13.4. But if you upgraded 10.13.6, everything just went out the windows. It's like one version is what did it to Pro Tools. Mm.
Yeah, that's always a shame. Like, it sucks when you're surprised by it. And I think most professionals have been burnt by it at least once, or know somebody that have, and that's why they are cautious. But it's you know, those first timers are like, yeah, I gotta update to Mojave so I can get that dark mode. And then all of a sudden, their old ass copy of Logic doesn't work, and and everything just breaks and ruins their whole life. That's always a shame. But
no, that'd be bad. I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, but no, we're here. We're on stable operating systems with currently working interfaces, so that's good.
Thank God, man. I thought I blew it last week
with that podcast.
Yeah, I recorded an episode of Good One with Microbiglia was the guest, and my interface was humming loud.
I think it came out okay. The sample that both samples that you sent me were not that bad. Like the bit with the hum, you could hear if you had really good headphones on. I don't think you could just that hear it out of your phone.
The both versions I sent you were like uncompressed and unnormalized. Like that, neither of them were at actual volume that you would want to listen to a podcast at. So if I had compressed those and brought them up to like a normal listening, then a normal listening volume, then you would have heard it. You would have been like, oh, that's bad. The second one though, that was cleaned, and now it's clean, and now it's loud, and it sounds great. Isotope, save my ass again.
It's good stuff. There was a Isotope ad. It might have been on Instagram today, or maybe it was like a pre-roll ad for a YouTube video that I watched. It wasn't for RX though. It was for something else that was kind of interesting, but I can't recall what it was. I don't know. It had something to do with
Nectar.
Yeah, maybe. I don't. It had something to do with like a guy who was putting. He's put some funny effects on his vocal. Like he would do a vocal and then he would make like a little melody on a piano track, and then using something of Isotope's, apparently you can like apply that to it and make a like a cool vocoder effect. It's kind of neat. I think it was a pre-roll ad on YouTube, but I can't remember what it was for.
Isotope has like Melodyne in it now too, which is pretty sweet. Oh, if cool. I was doing more music, it would be the clear choice for me, but
yeah,
I'm not doing as much music right now.
Yeah. On that note, you mentioned a single to me the other day, and you showed me some possibilities of artwork. Were you coming around on that?
Yes, but I need to know, is it better to release it in 2018 or wait till 2019? Either way, I feel like
the single?
Yes. yes.
How about this? I say single in 2017, saying new LP 2018. That leaves you 12 months of time.
Wait, 20.
I'm sorry.
You just went back.
Yeah, I just went.
You're going to confuse everybody.
Surprise. Every single one of these episodes of Podcasm were recorded in 2017. Isn't that crazy? We got right?
That's a Black Mirror twist right there.
Yeah. No, put it out in 2018. That way you have 12 months of 2019 where you can say, old best friend, LP2. 2019, and you could put it out at any time. You can keep waiting if you want to. You could put it out on January 1st. You could do whatever you want. It gives you so much flexibility. Yes.
I like this idea. All right. Well, I guess I'll do it now. But and then I won't qualify for it. I'll be forgotten on every year endless and every. Oh man, maybe I'll make it on like a most anticipated album of 2019 list. You know?
Yeah, maybe. And then how about this? You put it out maybe early 2019. And then you reissue it in late 2019.
Reissued after I signed with a major label, right?
There you go. Or any label. That way you'll be on those end of the year lists. People won't forget.
If I know anything about labels, I know they love re-releasing albums in the same year that they were released.
Hey, it's happened. I think,
if I know anything about publicists, they love promoting things that have already been released.
Didn't
years ago?
Didn't Top Shelf do that as soon as they signed Pinegrove? They put out a. That first like compilation of older tunes.
That was probably because they just needed to get something out. That what was it called? Like Everything So Far was the name of that, and it was just
well, you
every
could do
single.
That.
I don't think so.
You could. Oh, here you go. You just take the first EP and the first album, and you put it out in a collection called "Pretty Sure This Is Everything So Far."
That's kind of, okay. Let's leave that.
Get it? Because your song?
Yeah.
Pretty sure?
Yeah, I get it. Okay. I get it, Jacob.
Right. Okay, so yeah, new single soon. That's really exciting. I'm stoked for that.
Are you home alone right now?
Yeah, I am.
Are you fighting off two burglars trying to break in?
No, why?
I asked if you were home alone.
Oh, God damn it. Okay, I thought maybe Jazz was like scratching at my door, which sometimes you can hear, but I can't because I have my headphones
on.
No,
I can't.
Okay. Yeah, it's just me and the dog. May is in Atlanta, and we have an inch of snow here in Ohio.
Same in New York. It's crazy.
It is. I went out this morning, and you know, there's like a, I wouldn't call it a dusting because it was all slush. It's like a slushy snow. Mm. It was all over my steps, and I have wooden steps. Just kind of precarious walking down. But I got down to my yard, and then my car was completely covered in ice. I was a little bit late to class, and there was an accident on the road. And yeah, just kind of came out of nowhere, this ice storm. Now it's all white outside. It's kind of pretty. But
I always find it weird when you have the same weather pattern as I have on the East Coast.
Why?
We're not that far.
We're really not that far.
I honestly think that you, in my head, Ohio is like is where Nebraska is on the map. I know it's not, but in my head, whenever I think about Ohio, oh, that's God. How far I think it is.
No.
But like a piece of your state touches a piece of my state, I'm pretty sure. There might be like 20 minutes of Pennsylvania in between us over by
there's
the Great Lakes.
There's a little bit of Pennsylvania, but it's fairly similar. I mean, we're both on the East Coast. We're getting a lot of the same winds. And then you're on the ocean, so you get all that like ocean effect weather.
I'm not a meteorologist, Jacob. I'm not.
But we're on the lake. We have Lake Erie, and Lake Erie sends down a ton of snow because that cold air, it chills out.
It's just Canada offloading shit onto you.
pretty much, yeah. But yeah, we're here. We're in wintertime, so this is
it's
fun.
So weird. I feel like there were 60 degree days in October, and then like less than a month later, it's snowing. I guess that's how seasons work. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been told.
Yeah, they just
happen.
We say this the same stuff every year. It's like, oh man, you know, fall just really happened. And here though, it was like, it was pretty warm. And then we had like a little cold snap, but the leaves held fast. The trees were still plenty fluffy. And then over the past week, all of the leaves dropped all at one time. Some of them were still green. Like we still had green leaves and then they just like turned and dropped within a couple days and then snow. So fall was sort of like, It was late to arrive this year, and it was almost too late. We almost didn't get fall. We just it just kind of came in with a little snap before the winter came. But you know, I'm okay with it. I've been looking forward to winter.
Really, I hate winter. I hate it so much, man.
Why? It's an excuse to stay inside.
Dude, cold physically hurts me. Like sweating in the summer may like, yeah, it's like a little uncomfortable, like a little wet, you know, like whatever, like. Little stuffy,
yeah,
but like cold physically pains me. Like my fingertips turn blue, even if I'm wearing gloves. You know, like it can be like 40 degrees, and my fingers will turn blue. I just have really bad circulation, really cold hands all the time.
Oh yeah,
and I just like start shaking. It's such a weird. I hate being cold.
Me too.
So
but
much.
I stay inside, and we turn the heater on, and everything's fine.
But you have to go outside at some point.
Yeah, and then you get in the car and you turn the seat heat on and crank the heat on in there. You move to the next building with heat.
I mean, like, I don't really spend too much time outside, so I can't complain. But just, like, walking to the train. You know, I got, like, a 10-minute walk to the train.
Yeah, your commute involves a lot more outdoor time than mine.
Shuffling.
Yeah, a lot, yeah, shuffling.
Like, I just went to the grocery store, like, 15 minutes before we got in this call. I was at the grocery store. I was walking from my apartment to the grocery store in my waterproof boots, in my Nathan for You Summit Ice shell jacket. Mm-hmm. So far, in the past week, two people have seen it. And in a year of owning it, nobody has said anything except for this week. One was Mike Birbiglia's assistant, and the other was just some broker that was checking out. Oh, I guess Nikki Glaser counts too. Nikki Glaser also commented on it. It makes sense that comedians do it because, you know, Nathan. But like this just random broker that came in today was just like, oh, Summit Ice. Cool. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, what's their slogan again? I was like, deny nothing. And then we both thought about the Holocaust internally for like 3 seconds. And then we moved on with our lives.
Tell me more about the Birbiglia interview. Like you kind of told me about the awkward lead up where you're just waiting outside, but I want to hear all about it. I'm so jealous that you got to go.
It was so embarrassing. It wasn't really. No, I think like if I would just be embarrassed if you ever listened to this, but which you won't, but it was the interview was for his like a joke, but he also it coincides with his Broadway thing opening up, the new one. And Say again?
Oh, I didn't say anything. I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought I heard something in there. My bad.
Oh, it's possible. Jazz could be whining. I don't know.
No, it sounded like you were talking. It was like a weird artifact in Skype.
Oh.
Anyway, moving on. So I don't know how much I can say about this. Let me think about this. Okay. So the place that I had to interview was essentially it was an office. I feel like I can say that. Yeah, so it was an office. And yeah, I mean, it was just really weird. Like I was able to just, I show up at the place, the address that I'm supposed to be at. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty quiet street. There's nobody. It's really just me and a bunch of like parked cars, trees, you know, leaves falling and things like that. Nice day out. And Nev Campbell walks by me. That was the first thing that happened that threw me off. And that was weird. You know, just to be standing there with my podcast gear and suddenly Nev Campbell just passes by you. And it was definitely her. It wasn't just like a white lady with dark hair. It was definitely Nev Campbell. We did the celebrity thing where we make eye contact and she's like in her internal monologue is like, please, 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 please don't talk to me. Please don't talk to me. Please don't say hi. Please don't ask for anything. And usually I just look away as quick as I can. And I did that. And that was fine. But that threw me off, first of all. And then the second part is that I'm realizing like, man, this is like a pretty residential neighborhood. I feel like I'm like Mike might live in this neighborhood somewhere, and like maybe his office is close by. And sure enough, within 5 minutes of Nev Campbell passing me, Mike walks right by me with a bottle of water, seeing me stand outside. And I'm just standing there like on my phone, getting ready to text his assistant or whatever. Mike just walks by me, does the celebrity eye contact with me, you know, mm-hmm. just looks at me, and he's just, and then he keeps walking past me, and he walks into the place next door, or you know, he walks into the office, and I'm just like, oh, I just okay, and like, and then if that's not bad enough, I'm like, all right, screw it, I'm not going to be awkward standing out here. I'm going to call the assistant right now. And I pick up my phone and I call the assistant, and the assistant's like, oh, you're there already? And I'm only five minutes early to set up. And the interview's at 1:30. I'm there at 1 just to be safe. No, I'm there. I'm sorry. I'm supposed to be there at 1. The interview's at 1:30. I'm there at like 12:50. And 12:55, I'm like, whatever. I'm just going to call the assistant, see if I can walk in early or something and start setting up mics. And the assistant's like, oh, I'll be there in 5 minutes. Don't worry. And I was like, shh. So assistant comes up to me, said we do the regular old like Nathan for you Summit Ice, he sees it, that thing, and then he goes let me just go see if Mike's ready. And you know, he goes, yeah, Mike's, he pokes his head out the door after checking with Mike, he's like, yeah, Mike's ready. I'm like, okay, cool. And I walk in and Mike is just sitting there. He's like, yeah, I just essentially, he just walked by me, and maybe he thought that I could be the podcast guy, but he knew Jesse. Like, he and Jesse have known each other for a while.
You guys are both in the same spot in that scenario, though. Because, like, you know, ideally...
No, he's the famous person.
Right. Okay, but you're both just people on the street, and you're both, like, you're both there for the same reason. And he probably knew that, and you definitely knew that. But, like...
I'm just a dude... trust me, there's a million tourists that stand outside of... like just looking on their phones with rolly bags everywhere. They're called travelers. They're called tourists, and they're everywhere in New York City. And I was just one of them to him.
You got to spray paint like podcasts on the outside of your bag. Just,
if he had honestly thought it was me, I feel like he would have just been like, oh, are you here for the podcast? And which would, if he was wrong, invite in a crazy person into his office space. And that was understandably not something that would be good for him, I feel like.
On the contrary, it would have been a really good story for his next special.
No, that would have been bad. And it would have, because there was a podcast schedule. So when the real podcast people did show up, he would be like really confused, and Jesse would be confused. It would just been bad. Anyway, it was a fine interview, but like I walked in and he's just like eating his lunch, and I was like, hey, can I clamp my microphones to your nice office table? And like, whenever you refer to yourself in
like the past and you're like revisiting yourself, you always give yourself that voice. I don't think you actually talk that way, do you? Like.
That's my impression. At the end of every interview, Jesse makes the comedian do an impression of themselves, and that's what my impression of myself would be. That.
It would be funny.
But like, maybe could I just sorry, That's me.
It would be funny if Jesse pulled you into the show a little more and had you do an impression of the comedian in front of the comedian.
No, Mike did an impression of himself, and it was so good. He defaulted to doing Fred Armisen's impression of him and Bill Hader's impression of him. I encourage everyone to go listen to this episode. And if you only listen, I mean, the whole episode was golden. Like, everything he said was awesome, and he has a lot of great thoughts about comedy and what makes good jokes and how he writes. It was so good. But like the end, the laughing round, it's like a lightning round, but because it's comedy, is laughing. Mm-hmm. Jesse says that all the time. Because that last section where he does the impression of himself is so good, because he's doing Bill Hader doing him. And it was also very visual too, because like you've seen Mike Birbiglia's stand-up. Anybody who's seen Mike Birbiglia's stand-up will know that he has like this kind of like shaking with his hands when he delivers like a particularly effective line, and like his eyes kind of get bug-eyed. Yeah, exactly. And so he did that, and like Jesse and I were like dying when he did the impression. It was so good. I had to turn around because I was going to laugh out loud. But like, I don't know if that'll come across in the podcast, but the way he says it, like the line he says, he's like, this is not something that I ever said in one of my shows, but Bill Hader said it. and he nailed it. Like, just knowing that you can say any sentence in a Mike Birbiglia way was really funny to me.
Just you saying it, I can picture him doing that to literally anything that comes in my mind. Like, yeah. It's so like verifiably Birbiglia when it happens, that yeah, like if he's self-aware at all, and I know he is because I know he's probably listening back to his tapes, like he's well aware.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah
That's great. I'm so excited to listen to that. He's my all-time favorite.
Yeah, he's great. That was my adventure with Mike Birbiglia. Nothing else of note happened. Like, there were a couple package deliveries in the middle of the interview that I had to cut out. Like, people just come to the door and Mike would just be like, "Hey," and like yell to his assistant, like, "Somebody's here. Can you do this?" It happened like two or three times during the course of the interview. It was really funny.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Big week for him. He's he did that podcast, but then he also premiered that new show on Broadway, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
Are you gonna go? Do you see This American Life was doing discounts on tickets?
Yeah, but here's the thing that I found out about that show. I think they only, according to my theater friends at work, because I have a lot of theater friends, mm-hmm. The show was only announced like 3 weeks before the opening, I guess, or something like that. I don't really know for sure, but like tickets are all being sold at discounts across the board. Like TodayTix, the app is doing that. There's a bunch of different promotions that are going on everywhere. So the This American Life, I think, is mainly just like
promotional,
a certain section of tickets. Yeah, like the tickets
reserved,
all look to be the same.
Yeah.
I was thinking of doing rush ticketing, but I'm nervous about that, and I didn't really know what that was until recently. Do you know what that is?
Is that just like last minute like window tickets?
I guess it's day of tickets. So like rush ticketing, I imagine it's kind of like the whole like the idea of just, it's the, for the poors, you know, like the poors like you and I.
Cheaper if there are any left.
Well, another theater friend was saying that theater that he's doing it in, their rush tickets are all front row, but because the stage is so high, which is why it's they have to do that. The stage is so high that like it's not really great to watch musicals. But a one man show, I mean, Mike sits down on like in my girlfriend's boyfriend, the actual name of his special, he sits down and like just drapes his legs over the stage and talks. So like, I don't really think that a one man show would be like a problem to see on a particularly high up stage. But the risk is that like, you know, if you get there and there's not no tickets left, then you can't see it that day. And I have one day that I can see this. When is this airing? When is this episode airing that we're talking about right now?
Oh, good God. I don't know. Mid to late November?
December?
Or
November?
December. Yeah,
December, right?
We're in December now, I think.
Okay, that's good. My mom is coming to visit for Thanksgiving, and we're going to go see Mike Birbiglia. And I have to decide whether I'm going to buy tickets in advance or try for rush ticketing. And I think I'm going to buy tickets in advance because I have, while she's here for Thanksgiving, I have literally one night to take her. There's only one night that we have free to go see it. The rest are either Thanksgiving or a dinner with Aaron's family. So I have to decide if I'm going to rush ticket or buy tickets in advance. And I think I have to buy tickets in advance for the Sure Shot.
This comes out on the 14th, I believe. Give or
this
take
episode?
A week. Yeah.
After Thanksgiving, regardless. Yeah. So Thanksgiving's done.
Are your folks like comedy people? Is your mom like stand up?
Do you hear that siren?
Yeah, I do.
That's New York City, man. Mm-hmm. It's New York City. It's
okay.
Wild.
That's just how it is.
It's atmosphere. It's atmosphere. That at the old HeadGum studio, there was a fire station beneath us. So in the middle of a podcast, we would just have the fire engine just going out. And then there was jazz across the street. There was live jazz in the summer at the open bar. Mm-hmm. Not the open bar, but the open air bar next door. I remember I told that to one of the new hosts that was coming in. I was like, yeah, we got the fire engine downstairs and then the jazz. And someone was like, oh, the jazz. That's what we really got to get out of here. I'm like, he's a good comedian right there. They're more upset about the jazz happening than... They're like, the fire engines, that's fine, but the jazz, no way. No way.
It's so funny, because the biggest obstacles of sound here are also a fire department that is right down the street from my home and my dog named Jazz.
That is really weird, actually.
Anyway.
Your dog's name is Jazz.
Your mother.
Fire and Jazz. That should be the name of our first album. Fire and Jazz. Fire Station and Jazz. Jazz Fire Station. Anyway. My dad says that he's a comedy person, but he really liked George Carlin a lot, and because of the time he grew up and the time he was an adult for, you know, I mean, he's still an adult, but you know, he came of age during Carlin's, mm-hmm. you know, big thing. And I think he more likes the idea of going to a seedy comedy cellar-esque place and drinking alcohol while watching somebody he's never heard of say things on stage. And he'll just start laughing at stuff. I think that's just how he views comedy.
Oh, he's a good audience member. He's the one you want.
He wouldn't, you know, heckle or something like that. But he's just like,
no, he's
a good
sport. He's laughing at jokes and the venue likes him because
he's
buying
drinks. Always down for comedy. He's always down for comedy, but I think it's more the idea of comedy that he's into. I don't think he thinks too hard about the jokes. I don't think he thinks especially certain political comics or something like that. I feel like I could take him to see a comedian that he has every political difference with. Like, my dad is a Trump supporter. I'm going to be honest. I am not, but my dad is. And, you know, that puts us at odds inherently. And, mm-hmm. but like, if he could go see someone who just hated Trump and just shitting on Trump, and he'd start laughing. And then, whereas like, if I'm hanging out at his house and he sees me watching like Jimmy Fallon, or I guess probably Stephen Colbert monologue or something on TV, and I'm laughing at like some Trump stuff, he'll be like pissy about that. You know, that'll be his reaction. But live comedy, he's always down for that. Probably because he's had a couple, and also because it's just like, it's a thing for him. It's like an experience. It's a happening for him. He's just going to see whoever's showing up at the comedy club. My mom is super uptight about comedy though. Like, she doesn't like gross humor. Mm. And that's understandable. But like, she's just like, I guess I don't really know her comic tastes that well. She seems like more good natured, wholesome comics.
Oh, she'll love Birbiglia.
Like, I feel like she'd probably like, she'll like Birbiglia. I mean, people say that like people cry. The reviews of the new one are that you will cry while watching it.
Okay.
So I feel like, yeah, I feel
it wouldn't be the
you'll
first
laugh,
time for
you'll
me.
Cry. Yeah. So I mean, like, I feel like that's a good show to see with her, but like, Book of Mormon, probably not. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's
there
cool.
are some parents
I'm
that would love Book
you.
Of Mormon. Yeah.
Do you know? Maybe this came up in the show, or you've heard it otherwise. I'm trying not to read anything about the new one. I don't want to be spoiled. Like, when a new Birbiglia special
said.
Comes out, it's like such a big deal. That I don't want it to be ruined, but do you know, is this one going to be coming out as like a recorded special
no,
at
I
some
don't.
Point?
We didn't talk about that at all. That wasn't talked about. I assume that one thing that they did talk about, and I didn't have to cut this out of the podcast, and it will have aired by the time this airs, so I can say this. He said that people in LA are approaching him to make a movie out of it the same
oh,
way.
Good.
But he says that in the context of, he mentioned that in the context of how people perceive his work. Mm-hmm. Like that happened to him while he was in LA doing the new one, while he was on the road. And of course, if you're in LA and all your film friends are coming out to see you. They're like, let's talk about making this into a movie. And like, they're seeing it as scenes. Whereas like, you know, if you went and performed the new one for like, you know, Authors of America or like Novelists of America, they'd see it as like chapters and like, we need to like novelize this. This would be a really good book or whatever, you know, like a good memoir type thing. So we were talking about like segmenting his work and how how dramatic and, you know, scene by scene his comedy can be, more so than other comedians who are just kind of like stringing jokes together that aren't necessarily related with like a couple of callbacks here and there.
And you were like, you know, we should make this a podcast.
Yeah, well, no, yeah. I don't think anything. That's the best part about editing this show is that I don't think about anything. When I'm in the room, I'm just looking at the levels, you know, making sure, like, listening for things, dropping flags if something gets weird so I can go back. But, like, when I get to listen to the whole conversation actually when I'm editing, and that is the best part about editing this show.
Yeah, there's something to that. Like, it kind of reminds me of when I was in high school and I was doing audio. I would do like lights and sound for the musical, and every once in a while I would have like somebody helping me doing lights or sound. But it's so hard to like pay attention when you have so many other things to do. Like, you're making sure that the next cue is set up, or that, you know, the levels on this mic aren't really that great because the mic started slipping. Like, the clip is a little bit lower than it was last time, so you got to readjust. And there's like so much that you have to pay attention to that you're not actually able to watch and enjoy the show. And maybe that's okay when you're talking about a high school performance of Guys and Dolls. But when you're in the room with a comedian, like those that you get to interact with on a weekly or biweekly basis, that would be just a weird experience. Like, you're there, like you're there for the conversation, but you're not really hearing the conversation, not really hearing it for another couple days.
Yeah. It's like you're so engrossed and I'm trying to think, I guess maybe that's what making a movie is like too, where you're just like, when you're filming something and you're looking at this scene and like people that are working on this one scene probably haven't seen the script. Like my friend Sam out in LA, he does shoots all the time, and I don't know if he's privy to the script while he's shooting something, but like all he's brought in for one small part of a film, like he's the crew for this one day or whatever, or like a TV show or something, and definitely he's not privy to the over arc, and nor do I think he cares about a lot of these things. But yeah, you know, it happens.
It's that's such a weird thing. Like, not like just the idea of a movie premiere, even if you're one of the main actors, you know, but you're not in every scene. Like, you don't, and generally you're not recording, you're not making the film in order that the film will play out. So it's weird to see it all together. You probably, you know, if you're one of the main actors, you probably read the entire script all the way through, but even still, like, seeing something come together like that is a very, very interesting thing.
I think some people don't even do that. Some actors probably don't even read the whole script.
Well, I would hope that most do before they take the job.
I also feel like some probably aren't allowed. There's probably some films with like thriller elements to it, or like mystery elements, that they can't, they can only have their own lines. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not or director's choice, you know, to, you know, like, should, if you're acting in a movie, should you have the full context of your entire, like, the entire script? Like, if you're a character, you should only know what the character knows, right? I feel like there's probably some acting school that approaches it that way.
I think, yeah, it would probably, I guess it would depend on the director. I think the director would have a bigger say for that. Maybe they have like redacted versions of scripts that they send out to people who they have in mind for specific parts. I think it's different where if they're openly casting for something, generally for those, like, it's just, what do they call them? Sides. Where you're just getting like a one scene basically that you get to practice, and that's what you're going to do in your audition. But I think when you're shopping for somebody, you're probably going to give them a little bit more. And if you can't give them the whole script, you're probably going to give them most of it and maybe just redact a couple of pieces that would be best left unknown.
Yeah. Agreed.
Well, cool. Looking forward to all that. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Whew. Let's see. I went to a baby shower
episode.
Oh yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, it can be. I don't know. Like, it's coming out mid-December. I'm just going to put this one out in order. It doesn't necessarily have to be our holiday special, because we're gonna keep recording a couple more, and then I think we'll probably burn one, if not two, episodes over the Christmas holiday period.
And Thanksgiving, we're probably going to want to burn one.
Oh,
next
week
too.
We could burn one next week and then burn one on Christmas. That'd be nice.
Yeah, that's the benefit of it. As long as we stay a few ahead.
Yeah, I've been thinking, like, geez, what, we're like four ahead now? I think we're at four ahead now.
I think that's a good thing. Well, because we have, like,
fine.
There's like four holidays a year that we might need to burn an episode, you know, like Thanksgiving, Christmas, maybe 4th of July weekend, we'll need to burn an episode. So, like, I guess like three or four times a year, we'll just have to do two episodes a week recording or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what I was kind of thinking about, because we're going to burn through these. I think having three at any given time is fine. Like, I feel like four is still a little bit too far ahead. Like, it's so far out there. And lately, like, the edits have not been difficult, so I generally will edit all of them in a batch and then send them all over to Overcast so I can listen for any changes that I need to make, and then take notes and stuff, and then just queue them up once they're ready. But I don't think that we need four. So we'll burn one for Thanksgiving. Is that next week?
Thanksgiving is next week, yes, from when we're recording this right now.
Gotcha. So yeah, we won't record next week. That's fine. Yeah, we'll get through a couple of these. I've got some ideas for some other, from, I guess, some evergreen episodes that we could do in the future. But in the meantime, I don't really, like, as long as we're recording something every week, I don't, like we said at the top of this show, episode one, like, this doesn't have to be overly planned or anything. But if we have any good ideas, like, let's just do it. And hope maybe sometime over break, we'll have some extra time to record on another bonus episode of that. Or, here's an idea. How about we record an episode of Bantha Fodder? We haven't done one since July. June.
Dude, that's so bad.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That's incredible.
That's bad.
That's real bad. Deanna puts us to shame. Right. What's the topic this week, Mike?
Topic this week, I don't even know what you'd call it. What do you call this?
Playlists.
Playlists.
Yeah.
It's definitely going to extend into the greater music talk in general, I feel like.
Yeah, probably. I think so. If the playlists are any good, I think it probably could.
But okay, so last week, you, or 2 weeks ago, maybe at this point, or was it a week ago? You gave me
it was
this 2 weeks
ago. We almost we weren't gonna. I brought it up before we recorded last week, but I wanted us to have enough time to really put some effort into making these playlists and getting it all ready for this. So it's been a couple weeks, but the concept is basically just to kind of talk about maybe the existing playlists that we have. I definitely want to go over some of those first. I think that's always kind of an interesting thing. Like, some people make playlists, some people don't. I recently started. I just want to talk about some of the ones that we already had. And then I wanted us to do what I call, like, a crate digging challenge. Basically, to take an artist.
And you had to explain this to me. You had to explain what crate digging was.
I'm sorry. I didn't have to. I didn't want to. You made me explain this to you in so many terms. Like, I had to give you criteria, and I had to give you, like, boundaries, basically, on how to do this. Because you said you liked rules.
I like rules. I like playing by rules. But this frustrated me to no end, this thing.
Why is that? Why, like,
we'll get into it. Finish telling everybody what the rules were for this, though.
Okay.
So you gave me rules. What was our goal for this thing? Crate digging.
I wanted us to do just sort of like just a little challenge where we maybe pick an artist that we like. Maybe it's a newer artist that we found, or it's an artist that we have liked for a long time. And then we use Apple Music's exploration features, like their related artists section. I'm not sure if that's what they call it, but the related artists section to kind of dig into music that might be somewhat similar, but stuff that we haven't heard of, to see if we could find any gems. And the goal here was to just make a playlist. You came up with the idea of making it about the same length as like a CDR, which is like 75 minutes or something like that. And just making a playlist of the stuff that we found just by journeying down the rabbit hole of related artists.
Ooh, I fell pretty far short of that.
Did you? Okay. So do you want to go through this first, or do you want to talk about our like existing playlists, like the ones that we that
let's
we...
talk. Let's talk playlists in general. And okay. So playlisting is the act of essentially mixtaping, I guess. It's the same thing, right? Is that our millennial mixtaping?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's kind of how it started when...
Or mix CD-ing. I don't really know.
It's more or less the same thing. I think, you know, mix CDs were generally like a result of a mixtape, I think.
Right.
Or of a playlist, as it were. So you would make the playlist on your computer of all the songs that you wanted to burn to a disc, and that would be the thing. I even made, like in high school, I made like a floppy drive mixtape where I put all the songs that I wanted into a playlist, and then I put that playlist file and the songs into a folder, which I then put onto a floppy disk, and or not a floppy disk, but like a flash drive, and then I gave that to somebody. So playlists are, yeah, they're very much like a mixtape, but it's not necessarily the way that I've always liked to listen to music, just casually. So it's something that I have dipped into for like archiving or cataloging purposes and quantifying purposes, but not something that I have historically used to just listen to music. How about you?
If I try and trace back like my playlisting as far back as I can go with it, I think about, okay, so what is a playlist? Playlist is a compilation of songs. And you can look at it as, I see playlists as themes. Like, they need to be thematic in some way. Whether the theme, I mean, the theme can be randomness, too. Like, it doesn't have to be.
Okay, so is there really a theme? Like, if it can be complete,
yes.
If the theme is random.
But, like, the theme could be random, but it could be, like, our crate digging. Like, there was a rule to ours, but, like, what if the rule was just to find 14 new artists that you'd never heard of without having to use the related artist thing? Like, the related artist thing in our challenge for this week was the rule that kind of made it less random, but it's still a random thing. The goal was to pick a bunch of new artists that you don't listen to.
Yeah, but I don't consider that random, because you can randomly generate playlists on your computer today. You could literally...
Or songs that you like. You could make a playlist of random songs that you think suck. That's still a random playlist. You know, like... But, like, if you had to find a random playlist, make a random playlist of songs that you liked, you know, you'd... That, what I mean is that there's always a theme, but the randomness can be the theme in a certain respect. It's over your head, man. It's over your head.
All right.
We're talking very, very deep concepts here. Okay. So a playlist is a soundtrack to me. And so I think about where I learned how to make a playlist, and my first cassette tape ever... I think my first CD was Jock Jams, but even before that, I had the Rocky story, not like Rocky 1, Rocky 2, Rocky 3. It was a cassette tape for the entire Rocky soundtrack. And that had pretty much every song and instrumental even from Rocky, the Sylvester Stallone Rocky. Mm-hmm. And that was like my favorite thing to play for the longest time. Like Eye of the Tiger, you know, like Living in America, like a seemingly like random group of songs, you know, like James Brown next to Survivor, you know, like it's weird. It's there of the same era, I guess, but not the same genre. So you learn how to make a mix CD from that. And you learn about how like certain songs from different artists will precede each other and follow each other. And, you know, I can't hear one song on that soundtrack isolated without thinking of the song that comes next, you know, like Burning Heart came right after Eye of the Tiger. So if Eye of the Tiger finishes, I'm expecting Burning Heart to come back on in whatever context I'm listening to it in.
I love that. Like when, like, you know, when your mental playlist is going one way and then the radio goes a completely different direction.
Yeah, like the context of the song that you know, like that song is followed and preceded by songs, and it's weird if it changes at the end of it. Like, that's why I don't listen to CDs on shuffle usually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fall Out Boy's From Under the Cork Tree is basically one song to me.
Yeah, exactly. So the first playlist I ever made was a mixtape, a literal mixtape for my mother on her birthday when I was probably like 9 or 10. Yeah, I know. But I mean, like, so, but it was not like mixtaping, like, you know, two cassette decks playing one song and recording onto the other. It wasn't like that type of bootlegging. It was literally, I took my boombox, my little radio, and would press record and hold it up to the speaker. And so I would make really, really low quality, probably how, you know, mixtapes, like how the mixtapes were really made before, mm-hmm. you know, better tape decks came out, like two cassette tape decks came out or whatever. Like, I would just hold it up to the radio and make a recording of the song. And then, you know, stop the recording, load up the next CD, play it. And so I would just go through the CDs trying to pick songs out. You know, it was just a bunch of, like, Bruce Springsteen, and I can't even remember what's on that soundtrack anymore. But, yeah, that was my first playlist, was a bunch of songs. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, for me, the big change was dating. When dating started happening, that's when playlists became, you know, like another type of language, you know?
Well, it's a tool for wooing.
For wooing, I guess. But I mean, like, my high school girlfriend had way better taste in music than me. Also, she had terrible taste in music, and I had terrible taste in music. So let's just lay that out right there. Like, there's a bunch of bands that we are very embarrassed about liking. But she also liked a lot of great bands. And so, like, she basically formulated my musical taste and like made my musical taste what it was. I'm trying to think if I received any mixed CDs before her, and I don't think I did. I think that's when we first started like getting really into mixes. Yeah. What about you?
Well, I used to do the tape thing too. I would take over at my buddy Jimmy's, we would just buy like packs of blank tapes, and we would just basically, you know, we'd be doing like whatever throughout the evening, playing video games, watching movies, whatever. But we'd have the radio on in the background, and whenever like the DJ said that a song was coming up that we liked, we would just get ready, and then we would record it. So we would make our own little mixes based on these, and then we'd, you know, he had like one of the nicer players that allowed you to do this on two things at once, so you could make two copies of it. So we each had like a copy of the same tape, provided that we hit play on both of them at the same time. So that was probably like, that was like the start of all that. Once I got into like digital storage on my family's PC, and I got Music Match Jukebox and I learned Audacity and stuff like that. This is probably about the same time you made that mix for your mom, 9 or 10 or so. I made a Christmas mix for my entire family. And by that, I mean any family that we've ever visited on Christmas has it and plays it even today. 15 Dang. Years later. Yeah. It was a cute little mix. I took, you know, just a mix of all the best Christmas music that I had. Like, I basically made a mix or a list of all of the best Christmas songs in my opinion. And then I said, okay, this is the list of the songs. I can't duplicate any of those songs in the CD. I just had to pick one rendition of every one of these songs. So I would just go through every one and I would pick the best song. And if that song already had, like, if the best version of that song was already done by a singer that already had a track on this mix, I would just go to the second best. So it was a very varied mixture of Christmas tunes. And then interspliced between these, I had a couple of different tracks with some narration where basically I would just, whether it'd be like, I think I did maybe one at the introduction of the album and one at the end. I don't know if I did anything in between. It's hard to say. But just, you know, little bits of narration with some jingly bells in the background. And then I put it all together on a mix. I burned several copies of it. I gave them to my family for Christmas presents. And the artwork was Bing Crosby's White Christmas album. But instead of Bing's head, it was mine. And I did that in Microsoft Paint. And all things considered, I think it looks pretty good. So that was like my first real mixed CD, like the first one that I distributed and shared with other people.
Hmm. That's cool.
Yeah. Otherwise, though, like a lot of the playlists that I would make growing up were at least the ones on my computer. And this is, you know, prior to any streaming services like Apple Music or Spotify or RDO, which is the one that I used for the longest amount of time.
You loved RDO.
And, oh, man. I did.
And yeah, I remember you're the one who convinced me to put Old Best Friend on there.
I was on vacation, man. I was like on vacation with my family. I just had tons of time to listen to music. And RDO was really good for discovery. I found so much good stuff there. Like, that's where I found like Aluna George and James Blake before they blew up. And I was just listening like tons of really good stuff because they had great options. Like, you could click on the label, the name of the label on any given release, and it would give you a list of all of the releases from that label. It was incredible. It was so amazing. But yeah, I was on that vacation. I really wanted to listen to the EP and I couldn't download it to my phone otherwise. So, I asked you to do me a solid and you did it like within the hour while I was on my,
I mean, it was easy enough.
Yeah. Yeah. But it closed down like within a couple months of that, I think.
Yeah. So I never really recouped my $2.99 a month or $2.99 a year was or something like that.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. Like, thinking back to that vacation, that was the week I started using Overcast as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now you don't use Overcast anymore, right?
Yeah. Well, I use it to listen to the edits for the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because you can upload.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sure there's...
And you pay for a pro membership, right?
Yeah, I think I'm still paying, but I'm not sure how long that lasts. Is it just yearly now, or...
I thought it was a one-time purchase.
Maybe. I don't. He's changed the thing a couple times. Now it's like a tip jar that you might have to pay into every year or something. I can't really recall.
Interesting.
But yeah, in any case, prior to all of the streaming... just using whether it be iTunes or Music Match or Winamp, which was my favorite back in the day. I would make a couple of playlists, but usually it was just like, it was a way for me to find all the types of music that related to a certain subject. And it wasn't like a song here, a song there from different artists. It was like all of the music from Rammstein and all of the music from Breaking Benjamin, and I would just like put it all into these playlists. I think mostly because there were limitations to the software that have otherwise been solved now, you know, like it's a lot easier to just pull up everything by one artist than it used to be under these different methods. So yeah, I used to use it to like track how many minutes worth of music I had from a certain genre or in my library in general. I used to just keep a running playlist of everything that I had, just so I could say that I had like 7 days and 400 hours or whatever of this kind of music, or in my entire library, this is how much I have, here's how much space it takes up. Like, I used to keep those statistics, and I used to tweet them. I think I've deleted those tweets now, but maybe a couple of them are still up. I used to give like updates on the size of my music library in middle school, and well, I guess Facebook and MySpace probably would have been the place to put that back then. But yeah, I used to like keep track of that. And that's what playlists used to be for me. But I don't know. I've started to come around to them within the past couple of years, and really start to get into them and kind of use them as more of a, still like an archival method. But one that I can enjoy and then enjoy even more later on. At least that's what I hope will come of the playlist that I'm kind of making these days.
Yeah. I mean, I almost feel like I just want to jump into our playlist thing. Like, old playlists are fine and they're good to talk about, but there's a lot of feelings associated with them and stuff. And I don't have much to say about them, honestly, except to the person that made them to me and like just laughing and talking about that. That's kind of all I'd want to do. But like, yeah, it's weird. Let's talk about the ones we made.
Or... Yeah. Yeah, let's do it. Okay.
Because that was so frustrating.
Yeah. Well,
okay, so here's something I realized
that.
About that. Here's something I realized is I have not actively listened to music in so long.
And like, what does actively listening to music mean?
I recognize that I have to define this after saying that, but... it's been, just let me say that it's been years since I've had to actively listen to music. And by actively listen to music, what I mean is, like, if I've had to go out and look for a new, like, type of music. Like, I used to be on this community on LiveJournal called LJ Mixtape, and what we would do is essentially you just post mixes. It eventually became like a place where you could, you know, download a CD for, you know, and the rules were you could only download it for 24 hours and you had to delete it off your computer. None of us follow those rules. At least I didn't. Come get me. But yeah, essentially, and I would just download people's mixes from there and, you know, take songs I really liked and be like, oh, I like this one. I don't like this one. And I'd put it into my library. And I just had these kind of like little bastard songs. They just float on my library, but they were titled well, they were organized properly. And those would eventually make it onto my mix CDs for my girlfriend or whatever. And that was me actively listening to music. And I think after we broke up back in like 2011 or 2012 that we broke up. I all of my music listening was for the most part passive, meaning that anything that I started liking or that I was turned on to was literally thrust in my face, and I didn't go out searching for this music. Like when I think about Hop Along, how I found Hop Along, it was on Tumblr. Mm-hmm. One of my drummer, Matt Sokol, reblogged it, and said this song is awesome, and I played it. I was like, damn, this song is awesome.
What song
Let
is
me
that?
Buy this on Bandcamp. It was Tibetan Pop Stars by Hop Along, and that was great. And so when I think that to me, that's passive listening. Like I never, I mean, maybe I would have found Hop Along in some other passive way, but mm-hmm. but like I wasn't like listening to all the, like, you know, All Songs Considered and hearing the newest songs being released. I wasn't subscribed to any newsletters or scouting around on Spotify for new artists, whatever. Like I was very set in my ways musically. Hmm. And this challenge specifically made me realize that I have not tried to find new music in a long time. The most I've done is subscribing to Tiny Desk. And then every time I hear an artist on there that I like, you know, that's how I get my new music now. It's kind of like in between passive and active, because I had to subscribe to something, but it's just, you know, it's, you know, rolling the dice every week, essentially, whatever gets posted, and I might not like it enough to want to hear it again ever. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's fine, because I'm kind of in the same boat, dude. I haven't really been listening to, like, a ton of music actively in a long time. Like, when I had to, quote, had to, I was listening to new stuff all the time, either so that I could review it or that I could assign it to somebody else to review it for one of the publications that I worked for. And that wasn't always fun. Like, I did find some really cool stuff out of it, and I made some really cool friends out of it, because I found bands that I was like, holy crap, this is really cool. And it was like early enough on the train where I became like one of the first journalist friends that these bands had. And I don't know if you've had, like, what experience you've had with that, but in some cases, when you're a young band and you get to know somebody who, like, works for a blog, I think there's a little bit of like, ooh, if I'm friendly with this person, that could be beneficial to me. And I'm not naive enough to think that that wasn't the case with a lot of my friendships with people in bands. And I've come to learn that that was definitely the case with some of my friendships with people in bands. But in other cases, like, I've met some people that I've, like, remained really cool with, even though I have absolutely no way of benefiting them at all anymore. So there was a time where I was actively listening to a lot of stuff, and it was fine. I found some cool things. But when my time and attention was drawn elsewhere, I started listening to stuff that was more for me. And I think if you look at my end of the year list, which I still make at, you know, in December of every year, that list has waxed and waned a little bit, but over time it's definitely dropped off in the number of bands that I'm kind of touting as my favorites from the course of the year. So I don't listen to as much. Like, I still try to keep current with the bands that I do like, and every once in a while I'll listen to something new. I have an ongoing playlist that's called Everything, and then whatever the year number is. I started it last year in 2017 and then this year in 2018. Basically, if it's something that I've listened to at all, I added to this list. So it's like the super, super long list of basically everything. Like last year, the 2017 list had 1,500 songs. The one this year has 1,000 songs. And in most cases, these are songs I've listened to once, like probably won't ever listen to again. But it's sort of like it's just an archive of everything that I thought might be interesting in the year. And then within the past couple months, I've decided to kind of drill into that a little bit more and then mix that with older things as well. So this kind of gets into the playlist that I currently have and I currently use that weren't part of the challenge for this podcast. But I have this series of playlists that are just, you know, Curbside Audio 001, CA001. And I have these available on my Apple Music profile, which I can link for myself and you too as well, Mike, if you want. But these are just playlists of kind of whatever I'm into at the moment. So I do them in like 2 month spans. The first one I did was in July, and I did July and August. I have one for September, October, and then I have one that I've been updating for November, December. And this could be new stuff like this. You know, there's a couple of newer songs that I've heard from bands that I've never heard of before. Like the latest playlist, for example, the first song is Mr. Moonlight by the Beatles. Just a good song. I like to start off the playlist usually with something familiar. So in that case, that's
a great start to a playlist.
Yeah.
The way that's John. Just like Mr. Moonlight. Just like doing that crazy, like shredded vocal of Mr. Moonlight.
It's great. It's
a great opening.
It is. The last opener for CA002 is Cold Came With by a band called Old Plus Friend. I guess it only was a matter of time. And now I'm staring at the ceiling, thank the Lord that I'm still breathing, thinking, when did I get so desperate? Yeah, so these playlists, they mix. Like, that song's obviously very old, but it's an old favorite. And then the next song is a song that I heard for the first time 2 weeks ago, called Fell Asleep with a Vision by the Spirit of the Beehive. Never heard of them before. This is a new song. It was actually on one of Freak Ocean's playlists on Beats One Radio. But I really like that. And then there's another song that was from that playlist as well called The Lean Over by Life Without Buildings. Never heard of it before, but that song came out in 2000. And then there's a couple new songs. Like I've got their new Earl Sweatshirt single. I've got, this one's actually a lot of old stuff. I've got some songs from Alves, The Weaker Thans, John Prine, Left at London, Johnny Cash, Bill Withers. Like it's just a mixture of things that I'm into right now. And I just like I want someday to be able to go back and look at the music that I was listening to at this time, because I'm not scrabbling as much as I used to on Last.fm. I'm not like tracking all the music that I listened to like I did back in 2012. And I've lost all my old playlists because they're all on RDO. Like there's several years of my most active music listening that was cataloged.
Think
there.
About what happens when the death of your platform, you know?
That's right. It's just gone. So since I'm on, you know, Apple Music, which is tied into the iTunes music system, which has been around for a long time and will very likely be around for a long time in some incarnation or another. This is where I'm keeping all my stuff right now. And I still have like my local library and everything of music that I want to keep just in case the service goes away. But at least for now, like my playlists are here and I can promote a couple of them on my profile in case anybody wants to see what I'm into. But yeah, like I'm making this more of a passive affair. It doesn't have to, like everything in my life, I'm trying to simplify. So these playlists are just, they're just there. And if a song crosses me and I think, yeah, I like this song, I'm going to add it to my playlist, I'll add it to the playlist. And if I'm, you know, if we're going on a road trip or something, like generally if I'm alone in the car, I'll be listening to podcasts. But if May and I are driving to a family member's house or, you know, driving somewhere across the state and we want to put on music, like if we're actively listening to music, it'll probably be the Beatles station on Sirius XM. But otherwise, I'll just kind of put this on in the background. And it's just kind of good music. And if it's like newer stuff, it'll help me get accustomed to the new songs, and maybe it'll become favorites. Maybe they won't. But that's what, you know, time is for. Time will tell. But yeah, like those are the main playlists, like the Everything 2018, and then these this ongoing series of playlists. And then I have a couple of more that I update very, very irregularly. Like, it's just the kind of stuff where it's like, I might be able to use this playlist for something someday, and I'm never going to remember this song if I don't add it to a playlist. And if it doesn't match the vibe that I'm kind of assembling for these very carefully curated playlists, like the Curbside Audio series, which I actually do spend a lot of time in. Like, you say Mr. Moonlight's a great opener. Like, yes, it is. And there's a reason why it is the opener. And there's a reason why Ain't No Sunshine is the last song. Like, sequencing is a very big deal in these playlists, in my opinion. But I don't know if that would come across to the average listener.
I think there's a good... if you listen to it, like, unsequenced and then listen to it sequenced, I think that it makes a big difference. Like, you might... like, a listener might be like, oh, I get it now. As opposed to, you know, just hearing a bunch of songs. I will say I did not sequence our playlist this week. Like, the playlist challenge.
No, I didn't sequence it.
I wanted to, but then I feel like you lose the train of thought if I was to sequence this and try and make this like a good opener, a good closer.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I probably could have gone a couple more rounds, but like, I hit a few dead ends, and we can talk about what we did with that. But
if you listen to, like, the one that I have right now is ongoing, it's not finished, but if you look to last month's, or the September to October playlist that I have, I didn't have them sequenced at first, and I thought, you know what, like, I like all these songs, and I do want to listen to this playlist, because it's very fall. Like, this playlist that I made is very fall, and it fits the mood and the theme, but there are so many different things on here. Like, you can't go from Jonathan Colton to Thank You Next by Ariana Grande. You've got to have, like, there has to be a reason for every song to go to the next one. Like, it has to flow. And in some cases, maybe it's not perfect, but I think over the course of the playlist, like, it's going to be a more enjoyable listening experience than to just throw a bunch of stuff together. Like my middle school bangers playlist, which is just a bunch of hip hop songs from basically 2003 to 2007. It's a really bad playlist. A lot of chinging. But yeah, let's get into these new ones, because this is an interesting idea that I kind of stole from the Dubai Friday podcast. They did something kind of similar to different. They all did it in very different ways, but the way that Merlin Mann kind of did it was interesting to me. He just kind of started somewhere, and I think he used Spotify, which probably has very different algorithms and how they do discovery, and maybe it's even better. But that's what I want to dig into here. So, since you had the most trouble, Mike, and I've had the most to say about my other playlists, why don't you go first? Tell us, who did you start with, and what was the process of making this playlist like?
Okay, so let me ask you first. Where did you start? How did you choose your start?
Okay. I wanted to start with a new artist named Tamino. He's incredible. I absolutely adore...
How did you start there?
I went to his page on Apple Music. I did this on my computer. I don't know if that makes any difference, because it seems like you did it on your phone.
I don't think it should make a difference.
Maybe not. I think that the phone is actually a lot easier for a lot of this, but since I was sitting at my computer doing work, I decided to do it here.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the Tamino artist page on Apple Music, and here lists the latest releases, the top songs, albums, music videos, etc. And at the very bottom, there is a list of similar artists. And that's where I started diving in, and I was going to start making my playlist from this, but it didn't work out. I didn't end up making my playlist with Tamino as a starting point.
Okay. So you chose Tamino just because it's a song you like, right?
I absolutely adore this guy's album. Amir is incredible. It's probably my favorite record of the year. Like, it's absolutely
okay.
Beautiful. That's where I wanted to start.
Okay. So we started in the same mindset. I picked my song of the year for 2018, which, I guess, you know, it's mid-November now. So, mm-hmm. You know, somebody could surprise me in December. But, and also, like I said, as I said earlier, my taste should be very suspect because I do not actively listen. I passively listen. So, so when I say that my song of the year was The Fox in Motion by Hopalong, then you have to understand that I probably listened to like 4 new albums or 5 new albums this year. You know, like nothing. I did not go out there and like really try and hit it hard and learning new music. So I started with The Fox in Motion by Hopalong. She and her sister laugh. I was asleep with my mouth open. The whole drive down on the sheet. On the beach. Small lunatic boats. We watch them as they rush and retreat. No, I wasn't changed tonight. Or it has not yet been. That was mistake number one, you know, and it's not Hopalong's fault. I would blame it on... I also feel like if we had tried this challenge on Spotify, it would have been a lot easier.
Why is that?
I think Spotify has a better, like, you know, recommend it if you like, you know. And even better if we had gone off of Pandora. Like, if we had done, like, a music genome project and tried to do this. Because this is something else we're going to get into, like... Not only do I not actively listen to music, when I do actively listen to music, I am so high standards when it comes to like finding something that I like. And I remember this from back when I used to make mix CDs, when I was listening to those LiveJournal mixtapes, because I would honestly, you know, go through these mix CDs and be like, I like this song, I don't like this song. And I would know within, you know, like one listen of one song, or like sometimes you can know. I mean, you might feel this too. A listener might feel this too. You know, like you listen to a song and you can tell if you're going to be ready to skip this or not. And there are songs that you need to get 3 minutes into or something to really understand it. And certainly that was the case on some of these. But like I skipped so many songs, man, trying to find something. On this thing. And I also, not only that, I had to double back in some points. It was wild. Because when you choose Hopalong, you know, all that, there are a couple things that you know, iTunes or Apple Music will do with its algorithm, which is it recognizes, okay, female lead singer, female fronted rock group, Philadelphia rock group. And those are the pretty much the biggest three things.
Mm-hmm.
And it will then only recommend female fronted rock groups. And not
almost
all of them.
Exclusively.
It's usually like one, almost exclusively. If you look at recommended, if you like, or like, or you
the
might
similar
like,
artist
or whatever,
section, yeah.
Related artists, yeah. If you look at that, it just, you're immediately smacked with like Speedy Ortiz, Angel Olsen, Waxahachie, all of which made it onto my playlist. But it was it's just like very limiting because I've been trying to figure out how to talk about this all week, but I feel like I want to say that there's so much that there is, I will definitely say there is so much more to Hopalong than the fact that a female is the lead singer of the band. And I think it sucks that that's what defines them. And I think there's so much more to them than being from Philadelphia, and it sucks that that's also what defines them. Well, that they're.
Do you know that the similar artists are being referred based on that criteria and not listening history?
Well, I don't. I don't know that.
Because don't you think it's pretty likely that a band from Philadelphia would have people listening to a lot of other bands from Philadelphia?
Sure, but I also think that's an ineffective way as well. Like even if it is listener data, I think that yeah, like a majority of there are a lot of people that do listen to female fronted rock groups and also want to listen to other female fronted rock groups.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not me in this case. Like I want to find music that you know makes me feel like it does, like the Fox in Motion makes me feel.
So
you know, so like. So
did you try gaming that? Knowing that you wanted to find bands that weren't necessarily female-fronted indie rock groups, did you, instead of like going down a level into Speedy Ortiz, did you jump into Car Seat Headrest? Did you jump into Pine Grove? Like, how did you reconcile
that? Well, I didn't
do
Pine Grove. I think part of this challenge too is to find new artists, mm-hmm. ones that I don't listen to regularly. So like I've heard of Waxahachie, I've heard of Angel Olsen, I've heard of Speedy Ortiz, but I don't have any of their albums. I couldn't sing you any of their songs. Mm-hmm. And so this was like essentially my first venture. I thought Pine Grove, I felt like would be cheating. Yeah. And I know it would have opened me up to a whole world of possibilities. It would have made life so much easier. But it did not, you know, but I couldn't do it.
Oh,
you know,
man.
I couldn't cut. It would have been a cop-out if I had done Pine Grove.
We could not have tackled this any differently, which I think is totally entertaining, but also just these, it all stems back to the initial conversation where you're like, give me more rules. And at the start of this, I was like, I don't want you to have any rules. I just want you to go with your gut. Like, if go down whatever path. You're like, okay, so should this be a playlist where we take one song from every level? Do we just pick that one band, take a song of theirs, go down another level, pick a song, go down another level, pick a song? I'm like, well, if you want, but also if there's nothing good there, you could go back three levels and try going down a different path. Like,
I did do that.
Okay, good. Because that's how I went at it too.
There were a couple dead ends that I had to turn back. And truthfully, when I did see a male artist or something like that, I would jump on that and be like, it would be the first thing I clicked on because I needed to know. I needed to know that, like, but no. Most of the time, the dude sucked. All right, which sucks. But most of the time, the dude sucks. So maybe there is something to recommending it.
Yeah,
the dudes that I did find were good though. So I started with The Fox in Motion. Mm-hmm. And then I moved into this band called Bully.
Okay. All right.
So this is where we start talking about like what catches my eye or ear mm-hmm. in this case, when it comes to music. And like, I guess I was looking, whatever mood I'm in right now in my current point in my life, it's, I guess, a little bit more aggressive and repetitious music is what I ended up gravitating towards on this playlist. I think it's just how I like things with like very clear harmonies, very simple chord progressions, but effective tension. Like a lot of like, I feel like if you ran the Music Genome Project on the songs I picked, it would be like, yes, that makes sense that Mike picked all these songs. So I did this, I Remember by Bully, which now that I'm scanning through it, it was just like distorted vocals, mm-hmm. fast upbeat punk stuff. Yeah, just good stuff. Just shouting, like lack of melody. You know, it was like almost like a female fronted at the drive-in, I felt like, mm-hmm. you know, like early at the drive-in. So that kind of attracted me to that. Also, I had to, like, whenever I found a band, I dug through their top songs and eventually learned that the right way to do this wasn't necessarily to look at their top songs, but to maybe scan through the first few top songs or, like, sample one song from each album. Mm-hmm. Because bands change their sounds from album to album. Yeah. So, like, if you like Fall Out Boy and you're trying to find more stuff like Fall Out Boy, it totally matters what Fall Out Boy album you're listening to as far as what your next recommendation is going to be.
Oh, for sure. Like,
yeah, if you're listening like early Fall Out Boy and you're like, oh, I want something like this. It's if you just do their top songs, you're just going to get all their new bullshit or whatever, you know, and mm-hmm. it's not going to be something you want to hear. Or maybe, you know, but, like, the fact that Patrick Stump is singing is not going to make you love the song immediately, I feel like. Okay, so went to Bully, and then I went to No Below by Speedy Ortiz, which is, again, a repetitious song, mm-hmm. But it's one of the sadder, like, down songs on the mix. And we've also talked about this before, I think, but I don't listen to lyrics most of the time. Mm-hmm. Do you remember me saying that? Yeah, like it's like lyrics are the last thing I would listen to on any of these songs. Like I decided that I liked a song based on the music completely, melody. But this was one of the songs where the lyrics did stick out to me, where she's like, what's the lyric at the end of it? something I said, I was better off just being dead. Like that, like she says it over and over again at the end. So I don't know. It's just a very nice, slow song. And then finally I found a male band, you know, a male singer, mm-hmm. Called Cloud Nothings is the name of the band.
I love
and
that.
And this is another like, yeah. Wait, you love what? The name of the band?
No, I love Cloud Nothings.
Oh, you like them?
Oh yeah. Attack on Memory is great.
Oh really?
Oh man.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, see, these are all new artists to me.
Incredible. They're from Cleveland actually.
They are. Okay. But like the chorus of this song, cause like if you just played me the beginning, like the verse of Stay Useless, like I would be totally bored, but I gave it to the chorus, and the chorus is just, they have the guitars panned and the guitar on the right is doing this like this harmony, and it just, it takes it to a different level than if you just had the guitar on the left, and I like that a lot. And then I got Korn. Like, I think I must have gone down like every male band and the related artist tab, but then realized that there was nothing I could do. They were all bad. None of them were making music that I wanted to hear. So I doubled back, I think, and I went to Waxahachie from the Speedy Ortiz page. And I've heard Waxahachie before, but never, I couldn't sing you a song of hers or theirs or however they define themselves. But I found one called Poison that I really loved because it's short. It's like 2 minutes and 10 seconds, and it's pretty much just the same. It's got like just A, B section and some really great harmonies in the verses. What do you want? What do you need? Well, welcome, man. You get lazy. You get boring. You jump the train. Really dug that. Then I dipped into Angel Olsen, another female artist that I've heard of so much but
same
never
here.
Actually dug into.
Same here.
Yeah.
Yeah, like her name was everywhere either last year or the year before. Like she was just wherever you looked, like Angel Olsen was the thing. And I think my sister even mm-hmm. recommended her, but wasn't one that I've really, really gotten into. And you're going to find here, I started, the playlist that I actually started was with a band called The Beths, which is an Australian mm-hmm. female-fronted indie rock group. So
yes,
there are a lot of similarities in our playlists, at least for a little while. Speedy Ortiz and Angel Olsen were two that I actually ended up skipping, though. I couldn't find anything that really got me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that like listening to so much Speedy Ortiz, like I couldn't find much else in there that I wanted to listen to actively. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's one of those bands like Rilo Kiley where if I spent enough time with it, I think it would all grow on me, but I just couldn't, the rest of it really wasn't what I wanted to hear. But No Below really got me. I feel like you'd like it too. If you really mean it, baby, stand your ground.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure if that was one of the ones that I listened to. I just, for the record, I did also pick I Remember by Bully. Like, that is also on my list.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's because of all the songs, you know, of all the songs that were, that you, because, and all the method, like, we both use different methodologies, we both like different things, but mm-hmm. that's awesome that I Remember ended up on both, especially because you started a different spot.
I know.
That's so weird.
It's not, like, too far off. Like, I feel like the related artists were definitely very different. Like, there are two songs on our playlist that are the same. I also have Archie Marry Me, which is sort of a cop-out because I've known that song for a long time, and I just love
it. I've heard it before. Was it on a TV show?
I think I sent it to you, maybe.
Really? Always?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. For trouble, hey, marry me, Archie. Hey, marry me, Archie. I love that song, but I had to put it on here because I just saw it. And I'm like, well, this really, I'd put this on any playlist. So I put it on.
I honestly, I gave it a shot. Like I gave it a shot to not be a cop out. on a lot of these ones. Like, mm-hmm. I really tried to go find songs that were not their top played or their best song.
Yeah.
On the list. But in most cases, I ended up picking something that was just not.
I usually found something that was within, like, the top 10. Like, it maybe wasn't their top most played song, but it was something that is maybe, like, one of the most top played songs from an older record. Because I think in Apple Music, definitely, the newer records end up, and this is probably true in Spotify as well, but the newer records will generally find their way to the top. Like, 5 or 6 songs will make their way to the top 10 of an artist.
Right, because they're all the links based on from, like, the articles, the press pieces, yeah.
Yeah, 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 exactly. But, okay, so you got to, you have Frankie Angel Cosmos Olsen. On here.
Is that, what is, do you know Frankie, about Frankie Cosmos?
Nothing. Is Frankie Cosmos, is that a female-fronted group? Is that a male-fronted group?
It sounds like a female, and I dug a lot through this one. I found a couple that I liked, but I settled on this one because, again, it had that aggressive element, and it was just like a faster song. But also, like, the chorus is just so... Being alive... What's the line? Hold on, I'm skipping over to it right now. Really simple, like, high schoolish lyrics, but it just felt really good to listen to, and, like, the little background oohs and ahs were nice too. It's also super lo-fi, which I have a soft spot for. There was a lot of way too lo-fi that I found in my searches. I don't know if you experienced that, but, like, if you really get into the related artists, you can find some garbage music on there. And I'm sorry I'm being insulting to people who like that music. I won't name any artists because I honestly can't remember any of the ones that I hated, but, like, there's some stuff on there that's just, like, just trash recordings. And Frankie Cosmos is, like, that was pretty much where I drew the line in terms of quality of sound.
Like, I was going to say, like,
just dirty enough, you know?
Alex G, you've got Sandy Alex G on here, and I do as well, different song, but he's right on that edge because he's been making really great lo-fi music for a really long time, like a la Car Seat Headrest, but sort of in his own vein. But there's like... He is the line. And if you go anywhere beyond Sandy Alex G down his, like, rabbit hole of a genre, it's really bad. Like, there's a lot of junk in there, and you have to turn around.
Yeah, you got to double back.
Yeah.
But if you listen to the song that I picked, Change, you'll hear, like, it sounds like one of my songs, I feel like. It's the same chord progression for, what is it? 2 minutes and 4 seconds of the same chord progression over and over again, and it sounds kind of like Cold Came With that I wrote.
Yeah, I mean, he's lo-fi, but he's got a killer knack for melody. Like, he has some really cool guitar lines, and
well, that's the thing I love repetition, and I love tension in tension in chord progressions, and that song Change is just him doing the same thing over and over again with his voice with in a good melody. It's like, it's the same thing that music producers always say, you know, like pop music producers, they're like, all right, find that thing that sounds good and just keep doing that over and over in the song, and then you got a hit, you know. Got a hit.
It's crazy though, like, Alex G is this underground hero of the lo-fi scene, but he's and this probably, the Frank Ocean features probably had a lot to do with it. In the last year or so, he's just been, like, he's been on the up and up, he's rising.
I mean, there in Williamsburg, he, like, the subways were plastered with his ads, you know, like, he had
for the
banner.
New record,
yeah, he had like a subway banner, came out last year. Like,
Rocket?
It was weird to just, I have no idea. I couldn't tell you because I have never listened to him before, and I just saw the name as Sandy Alex G, and I was like, oh, I know that name, I've heard of that. People seem to like that fella. What is Elvis Depressedly? I have to listen to this for a second. What is
I have
this?
One of their songs as well. It's different, though. You've got Waste of Time.
If you try, I will try. If we fuck up, it's all right. There's so much more to life than all these wastes of time.
Yeah, I think it was just like a nice strumming. I think that the chorus also is, it was just a nice melody that was just happening. And I think it...
Their vocals get really buried, but it's intentional, yeah. And I love it. I've got Weird Honey.
I guess it kind of reminded me of like old Bright Eyes. A lot of this reminded me of like early Bright Eyes, which is the worst Bright Eyes, you know, like collection of songs, 1997 or whatever. Like that album is just like a four track, you know, like just him making music and sounds pretty bad. And you know, there are great songs buried in there. Like all of these songs are great, but it's just the lo-fi quality kind of will make or break it. In this case, it made it for me. I like the Elvis Presley one.
You don't have any you don't have any car seat headrest on yours, but he's very much lumped into this sort of vein that you're kind of going down in this moment.
I tried car seat headrest.
Really?
I tried. Yeah, I didn't get into it.
Okay. He did this interesting thing because, you know, he started out lo-fi, so he's got this like older record with some really good songs, but the recordings weren't great. And last year he re-recorded the entire record and re-released it.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Nice. That's kind of cool. I like that idea.
Everything on the rest of your playlist, I've got...
It got weird, dude.
I don't know anything on there until we get down to your Phoebe Bridgers and then Alves.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to... We shouldn't go track through track here, but I just want to point out one or two. Pill Friends was another lo-fi that I had to dig through for a while to find something, and I eventually settled on something super atmospheric. They're all just like... It's just a good... mix of weird songs.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, like a lot of Elliott Smith sounding stuff.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Cause I mean, kind of look at like where I like to look at where you started. You started with Hopalong, which is, you know, it's poppy indie rock, I guess. Is that how you'd classify that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a little jangly maybe. And then you end up with, I guess you ended up back with Always, which is actually a lot like Hopalong. But in the middle,
like circle.
You got really lost.
Yeah. Well, it was a good loss. It was like a loss through... It wasn't like a creepy sort of the part of the forest lost. It was like a, you know, like a nice little like trip through Candyland, I guess, where a lo-fi Candyland.
Hmm.
So one I want to point out on my list is this song by Soccer Mommy called Flaw. Talking to your friends for hours, slips and kisses on the mouth. I tried my best to work it out. I took you swimming by my... It's again just the same thing with every song that I've done on here. Just super repetitious, the same chord progression, pretty simple melody. I couldn't tell you what one word in the song is, but it's just like kind of got the old like soul guitar kind of feel going. The singer's not like amazing, not like a diva singer, you know, like I just pick songs that like tickled me, you know, in that way, like tickled my music bone. Phoebe Bridgers, it's just kind of like a nice trot. Like I want to drive a car to this song. Mm-hmm. I want to drive like through Ohio with this song playing, you know.
Sounds
the sun
right.
Setting in my face. Yeah, for that song, just like a trotting thing. And then Always. I made a full circle. That's how I felt.
Yeah, no, you definitely did. Like Always was like when I heard Hopalong for the first time, they reminded me of Always. So that's kind of neat. With Phoebe Bridger, had you not listened to her stuff before? Like when Sprained Ankle came out by Julian Baker. When that came out, I sent that to you and you gave me some thoughts, and I didn't really have the same context that you did, but I kind of saw what you were talking about, but it didn't really seem like something that you really enjoyed. But Phoebe Bridger is very much in the same vein as Julian Baker. In fact, they're in a band together now.
With Lucy Dacus.
Yeah. Boy Genius. Really cool group. But
I tried it. I didn't stick with it though.
Interesting. This record of hers, Stranger in the Alps, that was one that like really blew me away last year.
And why was that?
I don't know. Just really, you know, the fragility and just the confessional nature of a lot of the songs, I think, like just really earnest and really sweet. Like, and some of the songs were kind of funny too. Like she has a really, she has a clever way of delivering lines sometimes but she doesn't overuse it. Like she uses it in the songs where it makes sense. And in other ones, you know, she can draw back and be a little more somber. I don't know. I just listened to that record a lot last year, and I was happy to see it on your list because I didn't think that was going to be something that you were going to be very into because of how similar I think she probably is to Julian Baker in a lot of respects.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't dislike Julian Baker. I think I noticed a lot of, especially after she tweeted it, like about like I noticed a lot of similarities between her and Anthony Green, mm-hmm. in the way they bent melodies around, and I mean they have similar registers just because of the way they are as humans. But yeah, I really liked that Julian Baker album, the one you sent me to. What was the name of that one? The one
Sprained
that came
ankle?
Out. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just
album.
So simple. Yeah, it was so simple. I mean, I thought it was. I thought they made a big deal out of it, and I wasn't sure it was like, you know, the best thing.
Well, did you get to see her live on that record?
No, I did not.
I feel like a lot of the reviews that came out, like I think that record is really touching in a lot of ways, and it probably touched a lot of people on its own. But I think she started getting the credit that she deserved when people started seeing her live. I got to see her at South By, and it was one of the most memorable and transformative live musical experiences I've ever had. It was
wow.
So close to like, and I wish I would have gone to the set that week that actually was in a church, but it felt that way when I saw her in a second level bar on the main drag at South By. It was just so like, so still. It's just her on the stage with her guitar and her pedals, and everybody in the audience is just dead silent. Like people know the words, and you could see some people mouthing them along, but they're letting her do it on her own. And it was just so like piercing. Like I want to say haunting, but it wasn't just something that just kind of like lingered there in the background. It was just, it like went straight through me when I saw her. And that's when I really started getting it. And after I saw her at South by Southwest and I started listening to the album more, like I started really understanding. Cause at first I thought, yeah, this is really pretty. This is good stuff. And I think I saw some live videos of her before I even listened to the record, but it just doesn't compare to when you're in like a dark venue and it's just her up there on a stage and she's just singing those songs because her voice is so clear. And, you know, the music is so, it's very simple, but it's so pretty. And the way that it all comes together, it's just very, very, very good. And, well, I don't know. I think she deserves everything that's coming to her. But,
yeah. Well, I think she'll definitely, she's got a long career ahead of her.
Yeah, no joke. And like dude, I mean, she had like.
She'll be around for a while.
Like, who was it? Was it Brand New or was it Death Cab that covered her songs? I know she played with one, like toured with one group and. Was covered by the
Jesse
other.
Lacey covered something. I remember because right. you sent me a bootleg, I think, and or something of it. And the person next to the other person, somebody's like, is this something off of the EP? This is one of the EPs. You know, this is like unreleased. Oh no, I have this one. Don't worry. Like it was just like two bros just like whispering to each other, like loudly, like show talking to each other, mm-hmm. like bar at the back of the show talking to each other, being like, it's unreleased, bro.
Love that. Oh, she did a cover of Death Cab's Photo Booth for I think it was for like the AV Club's Undercover series, but then she performed it live with Ben Gibbard when she toured with them. How cool is that? Oh, she's so young. She's got such a long career ahead of her. Anyway, Let me briefly dig into my playlist for the best, because it was very similar in a lot of ways. I had a lot of the same stuff. The only differences that really stick out to me, I found this artist called Charlie Bliss. This is probably one that you would have seen in your related artists, but I don't know if it's one that you would have picked.
She's got her toe in the cornhole, bleeding out in a snow cone. Lost my world in the black hole. Stuck my gum on his soul. Take me on a date. Take me anywhere. Was I insane? Purple in the face. Rock me all the way. Man, my God. Burn me at the stake. Leave me anywhere. Was I insane? Purple in the face. Rock me all the way. Man, my God.
Super bubblegummy.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably like my favorite one of the whole batch, but I found this. I found Waxahachie. I found a song from them that I liked, which is cool because I've been seeing that name around a lot. Just haven't dipped in to listen. But I kind of cheated a little bit. Like, I went down some paths that I knew would take me to places that I hadn't been before, because after I kind of exhausted myself of all of the female-fronted related artists that came from the Beths and bands like Hop Along and whatnot, a lot of the similar artists that you found, I wanted to try to find something different. I didn't just want this to be like a fully female playlist. Like, I feel like a lot of the music that I listen to generally is female-driven in some way anyway, so I wanted to try to find some other cool indie stuff that wasn't necessarily in the exact same vein. And so I went through Pine Grove and I kept going and I didn't like what I found. I got into some stuff that was kind of cool. Like, I found a band called Bleached. I found a band called Foxing, which I've heard about for a long time, but never really gotten into. But it's just, you know, I was like, I could, you know, if this playlist experiment is to try to find something new, I don't feel like I should be diving back into the world that I just left. I shouldn't be looking for the absolute punk emo / pop punk brand of stuff that you can get to very easily 2 steps away from Pine Grove. So I went back and then I started digging down through these other avenues, and I don't know. I really wasn't finding a whole lot that really interested me, like beyond the female fronted stuff. I wasn't finding anything that was different than that, but something that I thought that I could listen to again. So what I did was I kind of cheated a little bit. I stopped going through.
Oh, you cheater!
I stopped going through the similar artist section, and instead I turned on a station for the Beths. And I think this is powered by Genius, which probably uses similar algorithms to the similar artists section of the Apple Music library, but pulls up some different things. So through here, I found some other groups called like the Vaccines, Blossoms, Mystery Jets, Bombay Bicycle Club, who obviously I'm aware of, but have never really listened to before.
Which song did you pick by them?
Shuffle.
They have a lot of great songs.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm just like picking the stuff that comes up. Like, it's basically at this point, it was kind of like Pandora in this way. So I added a lot more from there. I grabbed a song from the Maccabees that I liked, and I don't know. I'd say half of this playlist was found through similar artists, and half of it was found through the radio station. And yeah, there's some good stuff in here. Knowing that I didn't fully commit to it in the same way, I did another playlist just in case. And this time I started because full disclosure, when I finished that playlist, I hopped over to your profile to see if you had yours live, and you did. And I was like, oh, geez, we have basically the same thing. So,
that's awesome. But that's so weird because we started in different spots. Is that because we're friends on Apple Music and it's recommending?
It's because the Beths are really similar to Hop Along.
But But didn't you start with that other person, that dude?
No, I told you I wanted to start with Tamino, but I couldn't because maybe I don't know if I texted this to you or if I just wrote it in my notes, but I wanted to start with Tamino, who is an absolutely incredible Belgian vocalist and guitar player, but all of the related artists, as varied as they were, and they were all very different. It wasn't just a bunch of stuff that sounded like Tamino. It was a lot of really cool, interesting things. It was all in Belgian or in otherwise European languages that I didn't understand.
So there wasn't one artist that you could jump to
there was, I think maybe one that had songs in English, but I hated the music. And so there was like nothing I could do. I was stopped at the start and I wanted to make a playlist of things that I would want to listen to in the future, potentially.
That's really funny to me that like Jeff Buckley wouldn't come up as a recommended artist.
Something hides in every night, brings desire from the deep, and with it comes a burning light to keep us from our sleep.
They're similar in some ways, but in a lot of ways they're really not. And also, he's a very new artist. Like he basically started releasing things last year, and all of the songs that he released prior to this album are on this album. So I mean, he basically has a list of like 12 to 15 songs. It's not like a ton of people have really picked up on Tamino yet, and I hope that they do because he's incredible and I want him to come to the States. He had a sold-out show in Turkey last week that just looked absolutely incredible. Looked very much like that concert I was talking about with Julian Baker, just everybody very into what was going on. But yeah, I couldn't do anything with it. I couldn't find anything through the related artists. Maybe sometime in the future, I'll be able to find more interesting things through that avenue once more people start listening to him and liking his music and adding them to playlists and stuff. But as it was right now, it just didn't work. So the reason our playlist looks so similar is because I started with a band that was very similar to Hopalong. And that wasn't necessarily intentional. The Best were kind of my backup band because they're the second coolest new act that I found this year. But yeah. So I made a second one and I started with the Weaker Thans, which is, I think, another band you like. You listen to some of their stuff, right?
Again, I know like four songs by them. It's like an Angel Olsen, you know, it's just, it's been in my periphery for forever. Mm-hmm. And I love their theme song on Heavyweight, but I've never ever just like listened to a Weaker Thans album. And I get compared to them all the time. I always get told like, oh yeah, Old Best Friend reminds me of the Weaker Thans. I'm like, I guess. I'm like, I'm a whiny male, whiny white dude just singing with guitars and drums and stuff. So I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, spend some time with Reconstruction Site. That's the album I think you might dig the most. Yeah. From 2003.
Is that one, Plea from a Cat Named Virtue? Whatever album that's on, that's the one I've heard.
Yeah.
It's a great song.
It's a great song. I started with The Reasons. I know. In any case, I did this one a little bit more quickly, and I wasn't quite as discerning with stuff that I maybe had heard before. Like, I added some things that I was a little bit familiar with. Like, I am not a Neutral Milk Hotel guy. I think I probably could be, but I did add the title track to their very famous album to this playlist. Beautiful thing we can see, love to be in the arms of all. I don't know, this one's just more or less like fun indie rock. Basically anything that wasn't The Shins or Death Cab got added to this list. And I did a little bit of digging into the related artists, and I did a little bit of digging through their radio station, just kind of passively playing it in the background to round out the last couple tracks. But this one is a little bit more well-rounded and more in the same vein. And then I started a third one and I deleted it about two tracks in because I knew that I just wasn't going to get anything more than what I had that was going to be any good. Cause I started with Casey Musgraves and I can only go so far into the country well before I want to tear my brains out. So,
Casey feels that way too, I think.
I know. I had Casey Musgraves and I had Dan and Shay, and I was very familiar with both of them, and I tried. I tried finding a third artist, and I couldn't find anything that was worth listening to again, so stop there. But
what's that? Ride with me. Ride with me. Did you get that song?
No.
They play that all the time at work, and it's so annoying, man.
No.
It's so annoying.
I don't know what that is. I'm glad to say I don't know what that is. I'll probably hear it next year.
I hate when someone just plays just top 40 because it's the same four songs over and over again.
Yeah.
Every single time.
I was pretty lucky in my retail job to have a playlist that was a fair mixture of new and old. There was definitely some newer hits, but there was a lot of older stuff too. Like towards the end of my tenure there, they were playing a lot of Prince and Michael Jackson, which I was totally down with. Even a couple Bill Withers songs, which is pretty cool. But yeah,
There's good stuff at my store. It's like Tame Impala There's like Phoenix and stuff. It's like old Phoenix too, like really weird, but it's good. Like yeah, top 40 kills me sometimes.
Okay, so would you listen to this playlist again? This one that you made?
Yes, I would. And that's how I feel, is like it was excruciating to make it, and the process of it was bad. I think because we were going to record, we're recording today on a Thursday. We typically record on Tuesdays, but like Tuesday, I was so glad when you said we needed to push it because it gave me more time, and I added like six or seven more songs. You know, like that was good to me that I got to do that. But yeah, it made me like, I don't, back in those like LiveJournal mixtapes, I never actually sought out a band that I listened to, like that I found a one-off for. Like I was just content to find that one song and kind of, I didn't want to tarnish anything if they had another, like if the rest of their album was bad. And also there wasn't like Apple Music back then. You had like Real Rhapsody, I think, was the only like subscription based music service. And it wasn't very diverse in terms of what you could find on there. So, you know, if you wanted to follow up, you actually had to go buy the album at Bandcamp, or, you know, maybe you could buy it on iTunes and you didn't want to invest the money in a bad album based off of like 20-second song previews. So I just, you know, those songs just kind of existed in a vacuum and I was fine with that. And that's kind of how I feel about this, even though I have all of Apple Music and the internet at my disposal now. Like, these songs are great. Like I worked hard to find these songs. I dedicated many lunch hours to, you know, just sitting there with my phone and just doubling back and being like, this artist sucks. And then just going back again and be like, this artist also sucks. And then going forward and saying, oh, well, this one's nice, after cycling through like 20 songs of theirs.
Yeah.
It was like a real like labor, of love, I guess, in this sense. And I came out with, now I have 14 songs that I managed 14 songs at least. Yes, 17 songs I got on this one. And I'll probably keep going with it. Honestly, it might just be like a project now where I just try and find new artists. And I don't think there's one artist on here that I was just like, I would just listen to their album, you know, like just all the way through though, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
But finding new songs is more important, I think. Yeah. I would rather somebody love one song on my album than think, like then not listen to the album at all. You know, like I would be happy with something rather than nothing, you know? And I'm glad I found something from all these artists.
Yeah, me too. I think you should give the Cloud Nothings record a full spin. There might be like one or two other songs on that you might really like. It's the only one on here that I'm like super familiar with that I would recommend for you.
Mm-hmm. So your song of the year this year so far is Tamino.
I don't really know. I'm not great with picking like an individual song of the year. Like maybe
you couldn't pick one song that you like defined your year. Parallels with what happened in your life, but just like,
no, I know, just like I as far as single songs go, like that's so tough. That's so hard.
With Fox in Motion by Hop Along, like that, like I just can't think of a song that's made me feel that way. Because like it starts off very inconspicuous and probably would not, like it's just, you know, just a melody on top of like a kick and a snare. kind of with like some slap on it. And then, but like by the bridge is really what just kills me in that song. Like when it just gets to the, like, how could I explain it part, mm-hmm. just like such a great dance tune, you know? And when I saw them play that live, I leaned over to my friend Carly and I was like, you know, show talking, you know, but it was a loud crowd. It's a loud show. So it wasn't like a quiet, loud talking. I was like, this, the bridge of this song is awesome. And sure enough, the bridge happens. And afterwards she leans over and she's like, and she's English. I won't do her English accent. Right. But she was like, that was phenomenal. And I was like, yes, it was a phenomenal bridge. And I'm glad you felt the same way, or I'm glad you're humoring me right now. But yeah, it was such a great, it's just a really amazing song. And there's, you know, nothing else that's made me feel that way this year.
You know what? Your speaking loudly over a crowd of people at a concert voice is almost exactly the same as either Mike Birbiglia's drunk voice or Mike Birbiglia's sleep talking voice.
Oh, I guess I've probably just been listening to too much Mike Birbiglia. I tried to watch my girlfriend's boyfriend last night with Aaron, but she fell asleep. So
yeah,
she fell asleep right as he, because he talked about the T-bone. I never realized, like, I've watched that special once, mm-hmm. and I've never realized that he sets up the T-bone thing. Like, you don't realize at the beginning of the show that the T-bone is going to be like the big, like the turning point. Cause he mm-hmm. sets it up right in the first like 5 or 10 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
Talking about angry, like driving away or whatever. And then I got T-bone. And then he starts talking about like his elementary school.
He does that amazing thing where he backs up 20 years and yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so
and
good.
But it's so masterful. So masterful. Then we got to the part where he actually gets T-boned in real time, and I look over and Aaron's asleep. I'm like, oh, you're going to miss everything. You're going to miss the whole point of this whole show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
I've tried watching Sleepwalk With Me, like the movie, the Ira Glass-produced yeah. movie, several times yeah. with May. I've probably seen the movie like 6 or 7 times total. I've tried watching it with okay. May twice, and she's just fallen asleep both times.
I was wondering if she'll like it. I really wonder if Erin will like that if I showed it to her.
I don't know.
Like, or if we watch it together. I mean,
there have been Mike Birbiglia, either, I guess mostly you could just say his specials, because usually his specials are what ends up becoming something bigger. But there's been one for a lot of key moments in my life with various, you know, in various different ways, not necessarily like romantically. A lot of his things have to deal with relationships and things like that. But yeah, Mike just he touches this really interesting spot in comedy that few others get to. It's very personal, but it's more about the story than it is about the jokes. And I think that's what's most interesting about him. Like he's a very, very, very funny man. But his way of telling stories is just masterful. And I think that's why he's, you know, so tied in with the whole This American Life community and team of contributors, because, you know, he's basically one of them. He just has a better sense of humor. Like he's a bizarro Jonathan Goldstein who has a much different way of pulling together a narrative. But I like them both in a very similar way. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic.
But yeah, sorry, I don't have year-end songs. I do albums more. Like I'm better at picking out albums, because most of what I listen to is I just listen to an album all the way through, and if I like the album, I'll listen to all of those songs equally. So it's tough to pick just one, but I've got a short list of like maybe a dozen records that I really like this year, which is probably less than last year. I don't really recall, but yeah, and there's only one that I'm waiting on this year, so I think at year end it's going to be a pretty short list.
What are you waiting on this year?
I'm still waiting on the 1975s album with a title that's far too long to name. But
oh, right. Didn't you say they change up their sound all the time?
Yeah, every record's a little bit different in its own way. This will probably be the last record of. They have these things called eras, or I don't know if this is just like the thing that the fans talk about. But you know, every record has a different sort of theme. Like the first full length was black and white everything. The second one had a mostly white motif with like a neon pink sheen over top of a lot of their stuff. This one is mostly white, but has like a bunch of different primary colors kind of dotted throughout. And And with that comes general moods. Like, the general mood of their songs will change a little bit. This one's a lot more politically driven and more socially aware. And but sonically, it's a little more poppy than the last two. I think, all told, these three records will fit together very well. But whatever they do after this, I think, is going to be drastically different. I think they've talked about leaving the 1975 behind and returning to their old project name called Drive Like I Do, which was a lot more like pop rock driven, a lot more electric guitar and stuff like that. I think it'd be interesting if they tried that, just kind of going back to an old project and then switching back and forth between the two. Kind of like what's that band called The Bronx? And they have like their other band, which is Mariachi El Bronx. Have you heard of them?
Are you making a joke now? No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, no. No, there's this, like, I think they're like a punk band or a rock band, and they're just called The Bronx. And then they have like a second band that's called Mariachi El Bronx, and they play a different style of music. It's the same members. They just have a second band.
Do they play mariachi?
Yes. I need
oh
to look
my
this
God.
Up. I'm pretty sure.
All right.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. They have like a set of songs that they play, and they put out an album called Mariachi El Bronx, and just a whole different flavor of thing. They were on Warped Tour a couple times, I think.
Wow. On Warped Tour, and they've been, that's cool. I'm glad they can do that. Good for them.
Yeah. Huh. Well, I'm glad we did this. This was kind of fun. Like, it gave me a chance to go through and kind of clean out some of my older playlists. Like, I have a bunch that are just kind of dumb, and I added like a couple songs to it here and there, and I never did anything. And, you know, if anything,
we should do
like,
this
I
again
found a couple,
sometime.
Yeah. And maybe try it with Spotify and see if their engines are a little bit different and give us some different results. Not necessarily with the same artist, but.
No, not with the same artist, but yeah. Alternative to the way we did it, like, I think a more effective way of doing what we did today is because not only is there related artists, but if you pick an album, there's a related albums section in Apple Music. And I think that may have been more effective. It may have, like, some of the results may have been the same, but it may have yielded better results in terms of, like, albums that maybe came out around the same time, or albums with the same sound if a band is changing it up every album. That might be the way I would want to do it in the future, because I think, like you, I think you would agree, albums, like, if you're a person who listens to an entire album all the way through, it might be more effective to find music that you like by searching for related albums from an album that you love. Like, if I looked at Bark Your Head Off Dog and tried to find related albums, I wonder what would come up right now. Let's see.
Yeah, because when I listen to an album, you know, I can pick out a couple songs that I like on the first go through, but the ones that stick with me, the ones that I like, the song, individual songs that I come back to, are never the same. Like, they're never those songs. They're always something that I didn't really hear and love until the third time around. I think Pine Grove is a good example of that. You listen through and you're like, yeah, I like the singles, probably because you're most familiar with them, but then once you've listened to it three or four times, you're like, oh, Darkness is where it's at. Like, this is the song that you want to listen to on this record. But I think that kind of ties into my general thought about this whole thing. I think 2 weeks was definitely long enough for this particular project, but
yes,
overall, I much prefer the playlist that I'm creating organically as I hear songs. And whether, you know, maybe they're songs that I hear on a new album that I'm playing, maybe they're songs that I hear on a TV show. Like, I just finished watching Patriot season 2, and their music supervisor did a fucking fantastic job this season. You know, they had a John Prine song on there called Pretty Good, which I've heard. Like, I can't say I listen to John Prine a lot, but when I heard the song, I'm like, yeah, that's going on my playlist. Like, that's fucking fantastic. Like, it's like when you hear a song and the song says something to you at that moment, that's what I want in a playlist. It's the songs that, like, at some point meant something to me, not a reason or a means to filling up a playlist. Like, I don't want to just add something to a playlist just so I can say that I filled it up. Like, not every one of my curbside audio Apple Music playlists have to be 22 tracks long. If mm-hmm. they're 10 tracks long, so be it. I didn't listen to a lot of music in November or December or whatever the case may be, but I'm trying to playlist more.
I think now that I've made the switch to Apple Music and kind of just like I'm kind of locked into this thing now, mm-hmm. and I'm accepting that this is how my record collecting is going to be from now on, I think it makes more sense to do like a yearly playlist thing, like mm-hmm. a 2018, and be like, oh, these are the songs that I dug this year. Mm-hmm. The only trick, and then you know, the only trick I see in my, you know, you and I like categorizing things, I feel like, and like being very good and meticulous about our organization of our albums. But like, would you add a whole album to your 2018 playlist if you had like or would you pick one song from that album that spoke to you specifically?
I would have two playlists. I would have everything 2018 where the whole album would go, and then I would have a second one for all the good songs from 2018.
But they're all good songs in that album. What if you love whole album?
If you were doing something like that, I would have everything 2018 where the entire album would go. And then if there were like even as many as five songs from that record, which I really, really loved, they would go on the singles playlist. But I wouldn't want like, I don't know. I feel like I would listen to them for different reasons. Like I don't listen to my everything 2018 playlist. It's just, it's too much. It's, you know, 1500 songs. There's no reason to listen to that. There, nothing good is going to come of that. It's not going to, you know, I'm not going to find anything new from it. It's all stuff that I've listened to at some point, and I'm not going to get like a ton of passive enjoyment from it because it's a lot of it's stuff that I listened to once and probably will never intentionally listen to again. But if it was something that I wanted to intentionally listen to again, then I would separate the wheat from the chaff, and I would just put the songs that I liked on the 2018 playlist from that album, even if it's multiple songs. Mm.
Okay. Well, it's good to establish rules. We've established that.
You like your goddamn rules.
I love my goddamn rules.